and welcome to yet another edition of Columbia Technology Partners Ready to Prime, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, or of course on demand anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Just search keyword Ready to Prime. How are you? My name is Alan Scott, and I'm sitting in the offices of Bloomberg Government as we talk about contracts. Number one, Deputy Director of Government Contracts Research, Mr. Dan Snyder, checking in. Then, of course, we've got a Senior Data Analyst, and his name is Paul Murphy. So I always turn to you all when it's time to talk contracts. We were here, last year, talking about contracts with you as we set the stage. Actually, we talked about where the money comes from for contracts as we set the stage for Ready to Prime. I want to dive into some of the future or what we have to look forward to this summer, a new budget. I know you guys are digesting all of that good stuff, the budget proposal, trying to figure out where money is going to go and who's going to get it. But prior to that, there was already some money set aside for some fun things. And Dan, I want to turn to you. What are we looking at with regard to, and I have a few on the tip of my tongue that I could probably bring up, first and foremost being SETI over at DISA. What are you hearing about this? Tell me about the contract. What's going on? I know the RFP is ongoing at this point.
Sure. Alan, so before we get into discussing some of the details of the contracts, too, the skinny budget was released today. As we know, Department of Defense was and others. So a lot of that funding will have effects on these contracts as the dollars are obligated and allocated. In terms of all of the contract awards, because these are multiple award contract IDIQs, there's not necessarily an impact on the award of the contracts because they don't have a firm commitment from the agencies to pay for this projects right now. Once we get into the task and delivery orders, that becomes a little bit more complex, and the funding is much, much more important. But based off the analysis that Bloomberg Government has conducted so far, we're tracking right now about 20 programs in our list of top 20 opportunities, totaling $232 billion. And a lot of those top-line contracts include an on-ramp at the General Services Administration for the One Acquisition Solution for Integrated Services, which we still think has a reasonable chance of occurring by the end of fiscal year 2017. In addition to another big one, or two big ones, for professional services, which are Seaport Next Generation, who is beginning their recompete, as well as a DoD contract known as Information Analysis, and that one is an estimated dollar value of $28 billion.
So I'm glad you kind of reset the stage here, because I'm looking at just single individual contracts. You're actually bringing up a good point. There are more than just individual contracts out there, a whole bunch of them. And you do, I believe, on a weekly basis, the top 20 or top 10, is it?
Top 20. So in our list of top 20, we're going to track all of the top 20 opportunities that have yet to release a request for a final proposal. Mm-hmm. And then we're also tracking all of the contracts which haven't yet been awarded, which we classify as source selection tracker. And then we'll also track the third stage of that, which is the most recently awarded contracts in the federal government.
I'm here at the offices of Bloomberg Government with Dan Snyder and Paul Murphy talking contracts. Paul, what is your I know you've got just a ton of empirical data in your head and you're crunching numbers constantly. That $260-something billion, that's walking around money to you. I understand that.
Oh,
you keep that in the trunk then. I got you. Let's talk about the broader picture, so to speak. What are your thoughts as we move into the new budget cycle? And the president is, you know, laying out cash. And given what Dan has said, what are your thoughts thus far?
Well, I have a few insights into some of the trends. I think one of the things that's important to realize is that the skinny budget that was just dropped last night is the opening salvo of an ongoing weeks and months long budget discussion. The budget itself doesn't award money. It's the start of the debate, and it establishes the administration's priorities. And over the course of the next few weeks, there's going to be a lot of pushback and a lot of negotiation There's a lot of talk about, you know, the $54 billion increase for defense and the cuts in other parts of the discretionary budget. But you have some interesting allegiances emerging, some surprising ones. For instance, over 100 generals, retired generals, signed on to a letter opposing 30% cuts at the State Department, for instance. And I think you're going to see some interesting coalitions forming. For instance, a lot of the money that's being spent on climate change to protect coastlines impacts Republican states, where traditionally there's been a lot of opposition to discussions and spending about climate change. But the Gulf Coasts and cities like Miami are impacted very severely by rising sea levels and coastal storms. And so you may see some interesting coalitions emerge in the discussions about spending on the environment as well.
This opening salvo, as you put it, is one that every president, initial president, has done over years. You've been doing this for a long time. How different, and I'm doing the air quotes, how different is this opening salvo than ones in previous times? You mentioned some interesting things there, especially with the Republican states. Are there other instances such as that?
People are likening this budget to the first Reagan budget. Okay. And you know, that was announced very dramatic cuts in particularly in discretionary spending. We have a much larger cumulative deficit at this point. We don't have the Cold War anymore, but we have some very interesting overseas situations emerging with Russia in the South China Sea, in Eastern Europe, with, of course, the Middle East and fighting ISIS and terrorism in Iraq and Afghanistan, and also in Africa, throughout Africa. And at the same time, you know, there are a lot of important roles the United States has started playing in some of these economic development efforts and health, international health issues. George Bush's anti-AIDS initiative in Africa has paid tremendous dividends and saved thousands of lives across Africa. And so you have these interesting situations that we're addressing now that weren't being addressed back then, and there's a recognition, particularly by the Department of Defense, about the interplay between economic development issues and defense spending overseas.
You're listening to Columbia Technology Partners Ready to Prime here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My name's Alan Scott, hanging out at the offices of Bloomberg Government. So bgov.com is the best place to go to find out information, and on that homepage you'll find numbers to contact should you want to, or places to go to get further information about the stuff that they provide, like this top 20 list that Dan is providing. Dan, have you seen much movement over the 20, and are there interesting trends that you've seen in these top 20 contracts that you're tracking?
Sure, Alan. So just to clarify what the definition of the top 20 is in order to qualify, it must be either a professional services or an information technology single award or multiple award contract. Inherently, most of them are multiple award, but it is necessary to point out the defense weapon systems are not incorporated in this analysis. So a lot of the overall trends that we have seen have been identified as information technologies, mostly in fiscal year 16. So a lot of those large RFPs came out for contracts such as GSA's Alliant. And as those push to source selection and wait award, we've seen another wave of contracts more towards professional services take over and eclipse those information technology contracts that are waiting award. So two of the contracts, I suppose, that we should address in terms of which IT contracts are of importance based on what our clients are focused on, include one out of DISA, which you mentioned, for SETI, as well as another one out of FBI for a recompete. This is the fifth iteration of their ITSS-5. So the first one is of the utmost importance because it is taking care and handling a lot of the innovative projects that DISA and the greater DOD is trying to manage. So when that initially came out and was the acquisition planning originally occurred, it included about a $2 billion, maybe a $2.5 billion ceiling. And then they completed the contract for its sister, Encore 3. And then once they got to the planning stages to focus more narrowly on SETI, they then increased it by $5 billion. And that RFP was released just last month. So a lot of contractors are finalizing that proposal for the $7.5 billion SETI, which will handle what we think here at Bloomberg Government, a lot of the more high margin and more complex work for building the systems, whereas Encore will handle more of the low margin work for maintaining the legacy systems.
SETI is definitely the topic of conversation in the Central Maryland area, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yes. Well, with a tag that size, I think it's going to draw the attention of a lot of contractors throughout the Beltway.
Yeah, it's definitely doing that. Now let's talk about the NSA. The FBI contract that you made.
Yes. So that's another one. Like I said, they're in their fifth iteration of competing that contract. Right. They just released a request for proposal. I want to say maybe a week or 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And that's a $1.6 billion. They had a modest increase from the predecessor contract, increased it from $1.4 billion to $1.5 billion. They limited the amount of large businesses that they expect to place on that, which would indicate a lot of the or some of the incumbents will be left off the follow-on contract. So the $1.6 billion contract at FBI, which will be their primary vehicle for IT within FBI itself, will host six large businesses and six small businesses once it's awarded, and probably 9 to 12 months, realistically.
Interesting. Paul, you've seen a lot of FBI contracts come out. Is this along the lines of, this is a follow-on contract, I understand. In previous iterations of this various contract, has there been room for growth within the contract itself?
Yeah, I think so. I can't speak specifically to the FBI contract.
Sure.
But okay. In general, we're seeing kind of a rebound in federal contracting right now. It was dipping steadily following or as part of the drawdown to the military actions in the Middle East. But just this past year, you know, we saw about a 7% step up in spending, particularly in areas that are impacted by contracts, you know, like Dan's been talking about, the DISA contracts, the FBI contracts, professional services contracts, and IT contracts, where there's been a lot of emphasis. I think one of the drivers of spending in the coming years during the Trump administration, some of the drivers are going to be some very familiar topics: cybersecurity, health services. Of course, they're talking about strengthening the military. There's going to be an emphasis on equipment buying, mm-hmm. not so much on combat operations, but equipment buying. And you can, you know, see this in discussions about, you know, increased purchases of or more rapid purchases of F-35s, perhaps, but also emphasis on, you know, systems like they're deploying THAAD over in South Korea, anti-missile defenses in South Korea. You know, they're talking about, ways of equipping anti-terrorist forces in Middle East and in Africa. Through foreign military sales and other means. So we're seeing a lot of discussions about increased spending on equipment, and that's going to drive spending as well.
In the news lately, there, at least since the Trump administration has begun, there's been talk of cutting down on government workers, cutting down on the number of people that are on site doing the actual task at hand, and saying how that's going to be detrimental to the contracting world. I have yet to see any real information on this. It's been our experience that the government workforce has not changed on our customer sites, and the contractors are still doing a lot of the work that they've been doing. If they are looking at saving money by reducing the government workforce, that's kind of counterintuitive to what I would think, given that you're paying the contractors to do the work anyway. That's more billable hours for them. Does that make sense?
Well, what we haven't seen yet as part of this discussion, we've seen a lot of talk so far about the discretionary spending side of the budget and not about the mandatory spending side. And also, we haven't heard the full discussion about taxes just yet. And even affordable care, that was kind of put off, you know, pending the outcome of the debate in Congress. So without a clear understanding of whether these missions are changing, one way to interpret what's happening is, well, if the missions aren't changing and there's increased spending, but they've frozen personnel right now, we're waiting to see, you know, if there's going to be cuts.
Right.
That seems to me that the only alternative is going to be to spend more money with vendors. So this could be a period of opportunity for vendors to try, because the government has a certain amount. We've studied, you know, these inherently government functions and the critical spend, the critical functions that vendors perform in support of the government's inherently governmental functions. And we're seeing an increase, a dramatic increase in that spending, in the critical function spending. And so, you know, one of the trends could well be during the Trump administration, despite the fact that they say they don't want to bypass their freeze with more spending on vendors. You know, the fact is, if the missions don't change, the work has to get done. You know, the taxes have to be collected, the Social Security checks have to be printed. You know, despite, you know, cutbacks in some of NOAA's budget, you know, I think they're still going to want to predict the weather. and so if there are fewer government people to perform that, then I think there's going to be a natural tendency to rely more on, you know, the vendors in place to do more of this work.
I turn to you because you've got a big brain, and I was thinking the same thing, but you also are preaching something that I've been hearing others say as well, and that's about the mission. If the mission hasn't changed, how can you make these knee-jerk changes, so to speak, or even think about making any changes to the workforce, even freezing it? I mean, there are positions that are open that are frozen now that contractors are filling, which is a great opportunity for us and brings us back to the actual contracts themselves. What do you see on the horizon, Dan? As we are talking contracts, I realize that you eat, sleep, and breathe this thing. It smells like money in here.
So one of the areas that I think a lot of contractors and agencies specifically are interested in working collaboratively on is areas like agile methodologies. There's been a large award recently for a $1.5 billion contract to provide agile services. So some of these areas may not overtake the way that the government is necessarily doing the work itself, but changing the way they have historically performed it. And some of the ways that the contractors can assist in that process change is certainly an area of focus that our clients have been interested in. Here at Bloomberg Government, we have identified a analyst defined Bloomberg Government market for agile, which has seen year over year growth. And that's certainly expected to continue in the out years as a lot of these agencies focus more on modernization and less so on the legacy systems that they have historically.
So, well, you talk agile, I think software, and software is a huge area of opportunity, at least up north in the central Maryland area. I would imagine that's going to be the case. But Paul, you've got a lot of charts here in front of you. What is this stuff?
Just some of my recent research.
Okay.
I might point out some interesting trends we've observed, and it may help people, you know, connect some of the dots, perhaps not all the dots. I mean, one of the things we're seeing is continued strong support of small business. I know that's a constituent you try and serve in your work.
Near and dear to my heart.
You know, they continue to meet the SBA's utilization goals across the government on average, with some interesting kind of subtrends. I mean, there was over 25% support of small business last year. And let me point out, they're including now dollars. This gets a little geeky, so excuse me, but they're including dollars in the base against which they measure small business utilization that they used to exclude. They used to exclude spending overseas on any project because small businesses used to get such a small share, they didn't want to distort the percentages, the utilization percentages that small businesses achieved. But now they're including it, which has a tendency to depress the small business utilization goal. But they're still meeting their goals. So right. One of the things you don't see the government doing is there has to be more intensive outreach to small businesses in order to maintain, you know, these utilization rates, which, you know, last year was 25%. And they're doing that despite the fact they're doing it with record spending on set-asides. We're noticing that. We did an analysis recently showing they are utilizing more of the tools in their small business procurement toolbox. But at the same time, we're seeing things like a drop in the number of new companies entering the federal space. We've documented that new vendors doing work for the first time with the federal government is at a 10-year low. And so what's happening is small businesses are tending to increase on average in the annual revenues that they're receiving, and the spending is becoming more concentrated at the higher tiers of the small business market.
Could this also fall in the wheelhouse of small business that has outgrown that category, and there are not enough other small businesses coming in to fill that gap?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
So small businesses have outgrown that small business category and are no longer included in the small business pool. Could that be indicative of a lack of growth in the area of small business because they've moved on?
It could be. I think one of the things that is happening is that some of these contracts, like, for instance, Alliance Small Business, they're practically minting new midsize and large firms. Some of these yeah. companies are doing very well on some of these multiple award contracts. I can't explain right now, you know, why small businesses in particular are not, you know, entering the market, except, you know, the obvious that they're spending less money than they were 5 years ago, and it may have been a lot of war-related money that was attracting these firms. The government is getting a lot more focus, it seems, with the drawdown in defense. It's getting a lot more focus on specific kinds of missions and technologies it wants to achieve. For instance, there's a very strong commitment to veterans' health in the last several years, but also in the new Trump budget. The Veterans Administration is one of just a handful. I think DHS and DOD are the other agencies that are getting plus-ups in spending. And I attended a very interesting meeting recently, a discussion led by the CTO of the Department of Veterans Affairs. And he talked about their plans for incorporating artificial intelligence into the treatment of veterans. And they're building out up in Massachusetts with the help of Lockheed and a local vendor up in Cambridge, Mass. They're building out the infrastructure to accept real-time medical data from wearable devices on veterans' persons. And they're going to be accepting real-time data, massive amounts of data, and they're going to be linking it with the genomic information they've collected on these veterans. People don't realize the Veterans Administration has built the world's largest genomic database. 500,000 veterans have given them the VA DNA sampling. You know, if they're getting, you know, real-time information about heart rates and blood pressure and cholesterol levels and so forth, they can contact vets in real time and say, hey, you know, you're showing the early signs of a PTSD attack or, you know, a heart attack or, you know, some other condition that they can, you know, diagnose remotely in a preliminary way with the information that's being fed. And so they need artificial intelligence to process, you know, the petabytes and petabytes of information that they'll be collecting. So and then that all that information requires storage. It requires security. Obviously, you don't want to need to protect that information. You don't want it, you know, being shared with people who shouldn't have it. Electronic health records are finally coming to fruition, and DOD has started rolling out in Washington State the new health record creation and maintenance system, and that's apparently going very well. It's been delayed a little bit. It's supposed to roll out in December, but that's now coming on. DHA apparently is very pleased with the results they're seeing. So there's going to be more integration between DOD and DVA when it comes to the processing of health records. So there's going to be a lot of sustained spending there. And something else that kind of flew in under the radar this past year that a lot of people, you know, didn't, I think, underestimate the significance of, but the VA authorized registered nurses to start diagnosing patients and prescribing medicine without the direct supervision of doctors. And so the nurses obviously have to be screened and certified.
Sure,
and
sure.
So it's not your entry-level nurse. It'll be, you know, the higher-level.
Your BSNs, close to, that kind
and,
of thing.
And at the same time, they're establishing these technology centers at hospitals around the country. And so I think what they're doing with this investment in technology and authorizing the nurses to do treatments is they're decentralizing the delivery of healthcare to localities, to clinics and local treatment centers, and even to patients' houses, so that they can do a lot of the easier work outside of the hospital. People don't have to, you know, put a strain on the limited resources at hospitals, which may have been contributing to the delays in treatment that the vets were experiencing all these years. And so they're going to use technology to speed treatment and hopefully deliver very targeted treatments based on the genomic profile of each individual vet.
The health IT world is definitely expanding, as Paul has alluded to. Thank you so much, Paul. He's the senior data analyst here at Bloomberg Government. Dan Snyder, our guru of everything and the Deputy Director of Government Contracts Research here at BGov, is there anything that we've missed? Anything you want us to know before we leave about government contracting?
Some of these contracts, which will be awarded very soon. So the largest one I know for information technology companies will be the $65 billion Alliant and Alliant Small Business. But there's some also two other large government-wide acquisition contracts at GSA, which is their Veterans Technology Services 2, which is a $5 billion GWAC, as well as the...
I've been waiting for this one for the longest time.
As well as 8A STARS, which will be reserved for veterans as well. So those have been in source selection for quite some time, and it would be logical to assume that the government would want to take care of awarding these contracts, which will have a significant impact over the course of the next 10 years before they get into the complexities that come with the fourth quarter and the spending spree that entails.
That would be nice. BGov.com is the place to go to find out all the information you could possibly need. Thank you so much for being a part of the program, guys. I appreciate it. Columbia Technology Partners, Ready to Prime. Heard exclusively on Federal News Radio 1500 AM or on demand anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Keyword, Ready to Prime.